Pawtucket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
To the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Friday. Hour number two now underway. Text line, here's your chance to get involved with the program. Get engaged, 251-343-0106. Still to come, Austin Sidwell. That's about a half hour. Who is Austin Sidwell? He is running for the 1st Congressional District. He is running against Jerry Carl and some others, but he'll be with us here in about a half hour. And then 11 o'clock hour, State Senator Chris Elliott, our returning champion, and we will discuss the last probably 5 days federal courts and redistricting. So that's coming up in the 11 o'clock hour. Let's get to some text here. I've been putting these off. Mike. This is a long one. Mike says, Mike, you got to let this, like, Israel animosity, you got to move on from this. The types of people who always give the state of Israel the benefit of the doubt ever truly think the situation through. If the person is always the center of fights or something bad is always happening to you, then it's most likely not always them. Secondly, how would you feel if your family land had homes were stolen, given to foreigners to start a new country? How would you feel? I know my family's property, who had lived here 1,000 years, was taken away by a bunch of Europeans who are now killing anyone anytime they feel like it. I would hate those people too. Well, I mean, I'm not going to try to empathize with the Palestinians here. But here's what you need to understand. I mean, you can debate this and you can bring this up and cast aspersions on Israel. But people think that Israel should exist. Now, maybe they are engaging in bad behavior, but it doesn't negate, their bad behavior doesn't negate the right to exist in the eyes of most Americans. That's why they get the benefit of the doubt, because people think that there should be an Israeli state. There should be a Jewish state. Do you not think that there is some sort of claim to that land for the Jewish people? I mean, you're the theologian here. Maybe you missed that part of the Old Testament. You don't think there's a claim there at all? Unnamed texture, how does a map that actually represents the Baldwin-Mobile areas, county areas, as of how it's currently drawn racial in any way, it's just common freaking sense. Well and I said this before, look, they drew a map where the predominant factor was race. The 5-2 map. Can't do that anymore. At least based on the Louisiana decision. There's some other constitutional questions there. They took what is a bona fide community of interest, the 1st Congressional District, Mobile, Alabama, and its surrounding areas, and split it up. They split the city of Mobile up into 2 congressional districts. They said, yes, they may have some commonalities. They may vote for the same mayor. They may celebrate Mardi Gras together. They may work at the same places, have the same economic interest, shop at the same grocery stores. Those communities of interest, those factors, are secondary to skin color. That's what this 3-judge panel said. That skin color trumps everything. That's the ace up the sleeve right there. And that's not how this works. Now, what does Mitch and Shamari figures being in a company could just walk to the mailbox and get $1 million? That's why our system is broken. But, I mean, we said this long ago. This is the system we have. Incumbent members of Congress, there are just groups that just write checks to incumbent members of Congress. That's just how it works. The system is broken. But we're not talking about the system itself. We're talking about the system that we live under. Jason, I'll be voting for Jared Hudson, but Kalishi has 91-9 currently in favor of Moore. So the betting markets, or the prediction markets, if you will, that may not be a bad bet to bet on Jared Hudson with those odds. So I think he's got a better than a 9% chance of winning. It's probably not. It's probably more in the 30s. Terry, I agree with you, Jeff, on Manasco et al. And I hope the Supreme Court puts them in their place. Well, you kind of wish they would just cut. It's just whack-a-mole lawfare. They are engaging in lawfare. And then Todd's like, I didn't read it that way. But, I mean, the verbiage in that preliminary injunction was so petty. There was no reason to say the Alabama legislature, or the state of Alabama, I guess, was trying to dilute minority votes with a veneer of legislative regularity. The suggestion there is these racists are drawing a racist map and trying to use the cover of the duly elected legislature to do so. That's what that says. I don't know how else you could read it. Shall I read it one more time? After an executive review, we conclude that a preliminary injunction must issue. Ultimately, we cannot see our way clear to require Alabamians to cast their votes in the 2026 elections under a districting plan tainted by intentional race-based discrimination. Intentional race-based discrimination. Intentional. That's the key word. They woke up and they said, hey, we're going to draw a map that discriminates based on race. That's their words, not mine. That's their subjective analysis here. And under the unusual circumstances of the case, we conclude that a limited order requiring the secretary to continue using the court's race-blind map will not disrupt Alabama's elections. All candidates ran under the race-blind map until 15 days ago, and all voters remain districted under the race-blind map in electoral computer systems. Race-blind. So, if you're saying that this map is racist, but our map is not racist, it's race blind. How do you do that? You're taking something that this map is racist and ours is not racist, and how is it race blind? Because you're implying that your map's not racist. That it corrects the racist map. But like the Joyce Vances and the left wingers, Brian Lyman types, they're all cheering this on. They were all giddy about. They're just, these three judges are just taking it to that racist Alabama legislature. That's another thing. These lawmakers not really eager to defend themselves. These conservative fighters, but that's a discussion for another time. Salk Jones in a runoff of Freeman for state rep. Yes. Scroll Vereen. Was Democrat turnout really greater than usual, or more focused on voting for Democrats instead of voting for Republican primaries trying to sabotage it? It says Mike sounds like a liberal crying about stolen land. Scrovereen, your first question, it was out. I mean, turnout was about where if you just took the D and R's out of it, turnout was pretty average. But no, I don't. I think in the places where the voters came out, the localities would refute that argument that they opted to vote in a not meddle in the Republican primary, and they voted in Democrat primary. Because where they showed up, let me explain it like this: where Democrat voters showed up and vote in the primary, were places where Democrats are in charge. That the Republican primary, yes, there's a lot of statewide offices on the ballot on the Republican side, but you typically don't have big turnout numbers. That these are Democrat areas, that they don't show up, that their turnout was much higher, much more elevated in some places than it usually is. We know that there are X amount of Democrats in this precinct. And in a Republican cycle, there's very, very low turnout. But in this cycle, this Democrat precinct had much higher turnout. It wasn't like there was an interchangeable voter. So that's how we know that. The Democrats, we know, based upon that, the Democrats are more eager to vote in this primary. Mike, you asked people's opinion on the Israel issue. No, I don't see it. Pat, I don't think anyone should just get claims to land over some book written and rewritten time and time again. If you want land, you take it. If you can't hold it, you lose it, just like every other country in this world. Spurs are Oklahoma City. You gotta think Oklahoma City, right? I don't know. I watch it. It's on in the background, but I am not watching the NBA. There's a lot of excitement about the New York Knicks for whatever reason. Well, that's the big market. Gary from Somerdale. Did Democrats show up or was it mail-in fraudulent ballots? They showed up. I understand the skepticism here. I understand when you see a high Democrat turnout number, you're like, what's going on here? But when I were talking, you had a very energized Democrat voter turnout. That's undeniable. And it wasn't just people knocking on doors collecting absentee ballots. No, it was people showing up at the polls. I'm not saying none of that went on, but no. Democrats took time out of their day to go vote last Tuesday. But a lot of Republicans didn't. They stayed home. You tell me what that's all about. You guys know more Republicans than Democrats, I assume. Why did those Republicans stay home? We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
But somehow on and on I go. I keep on rolling with the flow. Folks said that he asked me how I bought it. I told him on credit. Daddy just smiled. I'll never forget it. Daddy never was. Said something just glitter and shine.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Friday morning. 251-343-0106. Austin Sidwell coming up in the next segment. So stay right where you are. Also our returning champion in the 11 o'clock hour, State Senator Chris Elliott. Democrats don't work. That's why. Well, I mean, Democrat turnout in the state has always been low because there's nothing to vote for. So that doesn't work either. the problem is that Republicans just didn't show. And the suggestion there is there's a little bit of a dispiritedness among Republican voters. Now, you know, this is the choir we're preaching to, the conservative talk radio listener here. But your casual conservative Republican, not necessarily engaged in the politics, said no to this. I'm not interested in voting. That's what happened. There's something going on here, guys. And yes, this is not just Jeff Poor doom and gloom and, you know, trying to make you all sad. But there is an outcome that you should be anticipating that is a product of this turnout on Tuesday. That your average Republican voter is just not that into it anymore. They're let down. Why? I think gas prices have something to do with it. I think some of the policy has something to do with it. And your average Democrat voter, with nothing really on the ballot to vote for but Doug Jones, is into it. Why? Well, they're mad at the big bad orange man, and they stay perpetually mad. That will never change. That will get voters out. Now, how do you get the African-American vote out? You tell them that the Supreme Court is taking their vote away. They're trying to dilute their vote. And guess what? You got a 1-2 wallet punch right there. Democrat voters are coming out in bigger numbers than Republicans. And I don't know. I mean, by virtue of having more Republicans in this state than Democrats, you're still going to get statewide elections that are big numbers for the Republican. However, when you start getting down into some of these local races, it's a problem. Lots of traditional Republican voters are simply sick of voting for people who say they're going to do one thing. Then we put them into office and they do the exact opposite. See America First, MAGA, and our state's most conservative legislature, for examples. That's from Mike. Sean, I stayed home because they're all the same person. And the result will be no matter which R gets in. Ultra Runner, presidents endorse candidates all the time, but Trump's success is unprecedented. He took some big scalps, and I don't know how. Does he fund them in any way, or is it just his endorsement? I think in this cycle in particular, I think low turnout helps Trump's endorsements. I think we watch this all cycle. You have a high number of undecideds. People, it's not that they're not voting. They're just, oh, man, things aren't going great. The guy I voted for really isn't getting it done. I'm going to go watch SportsCenter. You need something to move the needle, and the Trump endorsement is the best thing to move the needle right now, because the people who are showing up to vote are your typical grassroots, politically engaged, care more than the average person about public policy. And they're aware of the Trump endorsement. And that's why Barry Moore and John Wall outperformed. That's probably why, like, a Matt Simpson lost in Daphne. It's just the nature of the cycle. That the people, I think this is just a product of this political cycle, that the people that you can rely on to show up to vote are moved by a Trump endorsement, are moved by some kind of red-hot conservative issue, that's what it gets them out to vote. And then your average Republican, your casual Republican voter in Alabama, stayed home. Matt, I'm not saying this is the whole reason, but a lot of veterans are peed at the legislature from last year, too. I think that's, in a low turnout race, it all matters. And the legislature did just enough to upset some people. Public Service Commission, veterans, etc. Moz, my wife didn't vote because she was stuck with a screaming granddaughter, but intends to vote in a runoff and the special. But I don't think that's typical. I mean, people don't vote all the time because things come up in their life on election day. I do think that there's people, I'm not even going to bother this time. It's just not worth my time. It's a waste of time. There's always like the chronic, every cycle, Sean types. They're all the same. I'm not voting for either one. They're always going to have those people. But the people who showed up at 22 and 24 but didn't show up at 26, there is a theme there. There is a pattern there that we put our stock in this guy and it's not working out like we wanted to. We're not going to go out and vote Democrat. We're not that crazy. But we're not dedicated to the cause enough to go show up and vote on election day or primary day or whatever. Now, that'll pick up. Turnout always picks up in the general. But the primary is where that really matters because most of our offices are decided in the primary. People, for whatever reason, that message doesn't really pierce. I grew up in a house like that. Well, I'm saving my vote for the general election, but your vote doesn't matter. It's a formality in a lot of places. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show at FM Talk 106.5.
Hand me my hat, excuse me, man, but where's the door? From Carolina down to Georgia, smell the jasmine and magnolia. Sleepy sweet home, Alabama, roll tide, roll. Muddy water, Mississippi, blessed Graceland whispers to me.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poore Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Friday morning. Still to come, State Senator Chris Elliott, that's about an hour from now, our returning champion. So make sure you stick around for that. Joining us now on the line, he's a candidate for the 1st Congressional District. Got to know him a little bit on the campaign trail. But Austin Sidwell is with us. Austin, good morning. How are you?
Hi, good morning, Jeff. How are you doing?
Doing well, doing well. Thanks for making time. Well, I guess first off, let's kick it off here. How's the campaign going?
Oh, it's going well. Obviously, there's a little bit of chaos going on with the redistricting right now, but we love the opportunity to have another 3 months just about to campaign. So we're still out there every single day working the campaign real hard.
Well, talk to us a little bit about it. For our listeners that may not be familiar with you and your campaign, but tell us a little bit about yourself and your background.
Yeah, so I grew up here in Baldwin County, went to the Air Force Academy. I flew helicopters, did combat search and rescue for a few years in the Black Hawk, then was an instructor at Fort Rucker in the Huey. Moved back to Baldwin County from Dothan in 2023. Took over my parents' security company. Been running that ever since. And really, this is my first campaign in politics, first attempt at running. And really, I just believe Congress needs some fresh faces in there, some fresh ideas, and a really focus on the next generation and where this country's headed.
And if I'm not mistaken, you're also a lawyer, right?
Not a lawyer yet. I just graduated from Jones School of Law in Montgomery in December. Was scheduled to take the bar in February, and obviously the campaign was in full go at that point, so we decided to delay that. I'll be taking the bar next February.
Gotcha there. Well, let's talk about your thoughts on some of this redistricting drama. You got a new congressional district now. You're running in special election August 11th. My uneducated take on this, though, that we pretty much have an idea that this is gonna stick, and this is where this is going. That we're going to have two completely different congressional districts than what you guys have been running on for the last year.
Yes, so that's where it sits right now. I'm of the same opinion of you. I think the Supreme Court's going to come back down and remove the injunction and allow us to continue with the 2023 Livingston map that was passed by the legislature in the special session a couple weeks ago. But basically that took this district, it took it from 8.5 counties to include the 4 in the Wiregrass, and it consolidated it to Mobile County, Baldwin County, Covington County, and Escambia County. obviously it's something that needed to happen. I know there's a lot of talk about there. A lot of the, even the injunction was based on race. This move was not about race. It was about giving fair representation to the people of South Alabama. It's very difficult to represent the interests of both Mobile and the interests of Henry and Houston County on the other end of the Wiregrass. It's different economies, different people, different interests.
Well, and you know, it's just that this is a community of interest. Now, I know, I guess back in the 80s and before that, they separated Mobile and Baldwin County. But typically, historically, you know, except for that brief time period, it was all one congressional district. We all worked together. We all go to school together. We all go to church together. But you had a congressional district with the one and two where you just drew a line through Mobile, separated it by race, and it is if the three-judge panel said, hey, we understand this is a community of interest, but race trumps everything, and that's the way we're going to do it. That's my takeaway.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's wrong. I mean, that doesn't protect the interest. I mean, how do you split Mobile County in half? And not even directly in half. We just had a zigzag line across Mobile. I had people asking me all the time, I don't know if I'm in District 1 or District 2. My neighbor says they're in District 1, and I think I'm in District 2. And that doesn't work well. I mean, it doesn't get the representation you should have.
No, I mean, it's not, as the three-judge panel wrote in their injunction, a race-blind map. It's just not factual. That is not true at all. And I guess you'll find this campaigning here's the best example, Austin, and you looked at the results and just how you divide the district in half, and right through the middle of Covington County went one way, and the other half of Covington County West went another way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, when you look at this, you know, the centers of influence like you're talking about, it's clear. I mean, this is the right map. It's not about race. It's not about, I mean, by cutting out communities, by cutting out the city of Mobile, by in District 7, cutting out, you know, large swaths of Montgomery to ensure that there's a minority-majority district, that disenfranchises the actual, you know, the collective interest of the citizens of those communities.
Yeah, they just said, we're gonna do this because we're trying to meet this quota, we're trying to meet this percentage, this ratio, and that's not the intention. It's not constitutional, let's say, right?
It's not. Yeah, that's absolutely right. It's not constitutional. There is nothing in the Constitution about the division of districts based on a race category. It was supposed to be about the population, and it was supposed to be about the collective interest of that area. And you look at not only the geographic distance between Mobile and, say, Henry County or Houston County. I mean, you're talking about 786,000 people. And that alone is kind of getting so far away from the amount of people we're supposed to be representing. And this consolidation also lessens the amount of people in the district and makes it at least closer to, I think, what our founding fathers had in mind. I believe there was about 30,000 in the original districting and how it's supposed to be. But we have got to consolidate those interests and make sure that people are being appropriately represented.
Joined by Austin Sidwell, as candidate for the first congressional district here on the program. Austin, something I wanted to give you the opportunity to say, and I think you started to in some of the forums I moderated, but it was just kind of a time crunch thing. But one of the candidates who's now running in AL2 says he wanted to be on the House Armed Services Committee. And that was because that was like one of the questions. What committee would you try to serve on if you're elected to Congress? You think that it's important, if you're going to serve on that committee, that you do have some kind of military service. Talk a little bit about that.
Absolutely. And I know, and I think I saw some comments somewhere, well, you know, the president didn't serve and he's the commander in chief. And I get that. That's a structure that was set up. That's fine. But when you're talking about serving on a committee that is dictating the rules and regulations around our armed forces, don't you want someone that's been there? I mean, and now how this race, you know, is shaping up now, you know, me and I believe John Mills are the only other veterans in this race. And I think that matters. I think we need people in a era of endless wars and an era of you know, cowtailing to the military industrial complex. It'd be nice to have someone in there that actually lived that. And I was deployed to Turkey, flew in Syria, flew in Iraq. Like, I understand what it's like to leave your family to go serve the country. And I would like that type of understanding and compassion on the Armed Forces Committee. And I don't understand where you would go with none of that experience, why you would think you're qualified to be on that committee.
Well, the Armed Services Committee, to me now, it's a very important committee, and it's one that's coveted, but it's coveted for maybe the wrong reasons, that it's, you know, we can get more of our economic interest taken care of in our district. We can help the shipbuilders. We can help the rocket manufacturers up in North Alabama. We can help all these things. And that's based it's being used in a way for like an economic sort of committee rather than its stated purpose, right?
Absolutely, yeah. And I'll give you a good example, and this kind of bleeds in the district too. Right, we have Fort Rucker that is currently undergoing a swap over in the way in which they do their helicopter training and contracting. Right, like I flew there for almost 6 years. Like, you need someone that understands those contracts and how there have been loopholes put in there. Right now, there is nothing in the contractor-owned, contractor-operated contract at Fort Rucker that ties that contract to the location there at Fort Rucker beyond 5 years. That is something you really get to know and understand the needs of the armed services, armed forces, from being in it, from experiencing it. Being an instructor at Fort Rucker, I can tell you right now, we start to move that contract off of Fort Rucker. Not only is it going to substantially disenfranchise the entire community there that surrounds it, you're also, that's a strategic foul. You don't understand the resources that have grown up and developed within that community that support the helicopter training program, right? But you only get that from living it. You only get that from being there. And I think the same applies to more on a more broad stroke level to the Armed Forces Committee as a whole, right? When we're talking about funding, when we're talking about what our military members need, well, yeah, I've flown an ancient Black Hawk that was not, you know, updated in a fashion that allowed us to go into some of the most contested environments overseas. That's an experience that you need when you're making decisions based on budgets, needs, allocation of resources.
Austin, you mentioned it, and this is not meant to be a gotcha at all, but the military-industrial complex and sort of this conflict we're in with Iran right now. What's your take on the way it's being handled?
My take on the way it's being handled currently, I was okay with not having the intelligence that, you know, that obviously our senior officials have and our president has. I was okay with going in there. The Ayatollah is, they've been an issue and a destabilization force in the area for five decades almost. However, I'm also a product of the forever rule wars in the Middle East. It's time for us to have an end game and to get out of there. I think that there is enough to say that we've accomplished our strategic goals, again, without the intelligence information that our senior officials have. And I give President Trump a little bit more leeway than others do when it comes to his foreign policy, because he's done a dang good job up to this point. So that was my stance a couple months ago. As this war has progressed, I'm ready for us to get out. I think that the chaos that's being caused by the Strait of Hormuz being blockaded is a problem, and it's affecting us here at home. Gas prices are crushing us right now. With the inflation and everything that's come out since COVID, to add a jump and a spike in gas prices like we've had, it's time to start looking at what's best for our interests here at home.
Yeah, because maybe this was the flaw in the strategy that we didn't take into account fully. I'm sure it was discussed, but not really fully understanding the unintended consequences of doing what we did.
Yeah, and that's foreign policy is complicated, and I understand that. I think that in the big picture, taking out the Ayatollah and taking some of the power and hold that Iran had on the region is fantastic, and ultimately it will work to the benefit of American interests. However, we also have to look at what it's doing right now. At some point, you've got to look at the Iranian regime and say, okay, well, you know, you're not gonna give us the deal we want. We're just gonna continue economic sanctions, and we're gonna ensure that we get the benefit of the oil that's coming out of there. But I don't support troops on the ground. I think we're at a point now where we need to start backing off, ensuring that our deal remains in place, get the Strait of Hormuz open, and get our men and women out of there.
What do you think that's feasible? That, okay, if we start backing off, would you be concerned? I mean, Iran, would they look at still meddling in the Strait of Hormuz if we back out of this? That if we tone it down, then all of a sudden they got free rein.
Absolutely, but unfortunately, the dollars, I mean, the petrodollar still range right now. I mean, we've got to look at what that is doing to the dollar. I mean, right now, is it worse for us to continue to have a blockade at the Strait of Hormuz, inflating our oil prices when we don't even get the majority of our oil from the Strait? And I get it. There's more products. Oil is in everything. This is not just about the price at the pump. But, you know, whoever controls the Strait, we have got to get oil moving through there because our economy is tied to the petrodollar.
Or is it just a matter of, like, maybe scaling it back but still maintaining some kind of presence to ensure that the Strait of Hormuz is accessible?
We have a presence there. We're going to maintain a presence. We have a presence in the Middle East, and we have to have that presence there. But I don't know. I don't know how much longer our blockade and having, you know, our ships over there is benefiting the process right now. And I do understand there's greater arguments about what we're doing to China. I think we're successfully choking them off from resources that they need right now, and it puts them in a bargaining in a position to strike a deal. And I think that's ultimately Trump's plan. I mean, going through Venezuela, going through Iran, this is affecting China, and that's good. We need to show dominance to China. We need to stop kowtowing to their interest. But we also need to look at what's affecting ours. So I don't know, some sort of pullout while we still remain there as an arbiter would be preferable. I think that would be the best option right now.
Austin, folks want to find out more about your campaign, get in touch. How can they do so?
Absolutely. You can go follow us on any social media. Our website, campaign website, SidwellForCongress.com. You can go on there. You can sign up to volunteer. Like I tell a lot of people, I am not funded by the big special interest in D.C. I have been funded by people locally, and I think that's what we need. You know, our congressmen have been bought by special interest in D.C., and in order for us to fight that, we're going to need people from across the Alabama's 1st District to step up and donate to candidates like me that are outside of that system.
Austin, we appreciate it. We'll talk again soon.
Yeah, Jeff, thank you.
All right, let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Curtis Slow was the finest pickup to ever play the blues. I saw the light, I saw the light. No more darkness, no more night. Now I'm so happy, no sorrow inside.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Friday morning. 251-343-0106. Our returning champion, State Senator Chris Elliott. That's coming up in the next hour. Scrovarine, like a Republican turnout is unacceptable. They are just helping Democrats do their thing. Or are they just foolishly and selfishly sure everything will be red? Probably a little bit of both. I mean, I don't think they're helping, like, hey, I'm going to help Democrats and stay home today. But Republicans are nobody to blame but themselves. Like, what is there to get excited about? Well, we just passed another economic development incentive program here. Workforce training. Man, it is high cotton in Alabama. Was that really doing it for you? Oh, we just expanded the port. Man, I mean, it is so awesome. I'm going to get out and vote. My life is so much better. Yeah, guys. I mean, it's just, I don't think any of that necessarily is true. There's a dispiritedness, and it's Trump, and it's Republicans. It's the natural course of events. When Trump was first sworn in, we had the Doge, we had all these executive orders, the border was shut down, and you saw the first 100 days. He had a decent first 100 days, but it wasn't going to last. I think the strategic, at least politically, now policy-wise, it may prove to be genius. Politically, striking Iran was a mistake. You divided up the Republican Party. You went to war with, like, Thomas Massey. Epstein had a little to do with it, but I don't know that that matters as much as the price people are paying at the pump. But you had a schism in the conservative movement. You had the stalwart Trump defenders all of a sudden find themselves on the outs over Iran. Like I said, in the long run, it may prove to be a genius policy move. In the short term, it has profound political implications. Now, if gas prices aren't where they are because of Iran, I don't think it matters as much. It's Venezuela. But, there's a price to be paid for this stuff, and this stuff has to be taken into account, and it has to be talked about. 251-343-0106. More of your text on the other side. Stick around. This is the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. When the dealing's done, every gambler knows